Michael Beach has been at the CDC for over 27 years, where he's currently Associate Director for Healthy Water. Go figure, in CDC's National Center for Emerging and Zoonotic Infectious Diseases, and Deputy Director of the Division of Foodborne, Waterborne, and Environmental Diseases. He created CDC's Healthy Swimming Program in 2001 and co-founded the Model Aquatic Health Code effort in 2007. He's currently President of the Board of Directors of Council for Model Aquatic Health Code, which he's going to be talking about. His extraneous, he calls it an extraneous fact, was that he and his wife Lynn were married in 1980, congratulations, a few days after Mount St. Helens blew, so he was lucky to get out of Washington State for the wedding. And when they were arrived at Yosemite Valley, California for their honeymoon, to a long line of tourists fleeing the valley due to the 300 earthquakes that occurred over the next week. Well, we're glad you're still here, and he's the last presentation of this session, and he's going to be talking about CST's role in promoting health and safety at public swimming facilities, engaging in the updated and improvement process for the new National Model Aquatic Health Code.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much, and sorry about that stool story, but yeah, I'm the last one. I had to keep everybody kind of entertained there. So this talk is about communication. It's about connection. And so what's the role of CSDE is we think EPI is one big group. We know it's not. Look at all the committees and everything that we've got. It's about connecting EPIs. So we're talking about ID, injury, environmental health, preparedness, all those EPI groups that are separated, and connecting them with environmental health sanitarians that take care of pool programs, throw in some public health law, throw in some of these other things, and it's how do you do this and collect data, analyze data to use it so that we can start to improve the state of aquatics. And I mean from a construction, design, and operational standpoint. And I think that's the focus of this. That's the, what's the bluff thing? You know, it's before giving you that bottom line up front sort of thing that we heard about from the Alaska commissioner. Do that first, and then everybody can leave because I'm the last talk. So with that, let's just, again, I don't need to read all of this, but this is an all-hazard sort of situation here when we're talking about drowning, spinal cord injuries, indoor air quality issues, pool chemical-associated injuries, waterborne outbreaks significantly increasing, and a high rate of pool and spa closures. We just published a surveillance summary just a few weeks ago talking about this. But these are the issues that circle around aquatics and why we need to think of aquatics as an all-encompassing sort of thing. I am an infectious disease person. It was about crypto. It made no sense to really go that direction. It really needed to be an all-hazards thing. So we kind of walked across the grass over to see Charles Otto and Environmental Health and say, we need to do something about this. And then we linked up with Julie Gilchrist in injury, again, to start talking about this in a more holistic fashion. So we're trying to walk the walk of what we're saying needs to be done at the state and local level. You know, current code development, I don't think I need to tell everybody, but it's very disparate. All swimming pool codes are developed at the state and local level. As you heard, there's really no federal jurisdiction except for some small bits and pieces. But it's not like with EPA, which oversees the ambient waters, the marine and rivers. It's really all down at the state and local level to do that. When these codes are created, they may or may not include input from regulated parties or industry. I think that's a critical lapse sometimes, is that what we see when codes are being put in is who opposes them? It's the people who are regulated. If you work with them to come up with something, it's much less likely that you'll find opposition versus support. It requires significant staff resources and time to do this on a regular basis to research, prepare, and develop the code language for this. It's very intricate. And generally, there's a lack of a lot of the expertise needed to do this to keep up with the latest technology. The industry is at the front end of this because it's about entertainment. And so they are changing things every year. Every moment, they're trying to give the latest, greatest thing that's out there. Surf pools are now the big thing that you can really go surfing at one of these parks. And they need perpetual updating because they are out of date. They are essentially out of date when they come online. So in 2004, at CSDE, preventive medicine residents that was working with me in Kansas, we prepared a position statement asking CDC to convene a national workshop to develop recommendations how we were going to really prevent recreational water-associated infections. You notice it was infections then. And we wanted to kind of support from CSD on how to do that. 2005, CDC held this national workshop. We convened federal, state, and local public health officials, but we included the experts in the aquatic sector and academics as well. And I say again, from an industry standpoint, the people who really know about aquatics are the top-notch people who run these facilities and design them. And so we needed them to be involved here. The major recommendation that came out of that effort was to develop a national model code for voluntary state and local adoption. Save time, save resources, build coalitions, so that we can do this more efficiently and do this on a national basis and gathering input and make that better. The scope was essentially all public swimming facilities. We're not walking into backyard residences. We know we don't go there from a public health standpoint, but we do think that this model code can influence what happens in the residential sector where a lot of these injuries and drownings and so on occur. So man-made, treated, recirculated public venues, and we know that there are a lot of venues that seem to try and skirt around and not be regulated by changing something within that. We're trying to plug those gaps in this model code so that it's harder to opt out of regulation by trying to design around it. And then all areas of public health concern. So this is all hazards. It really is about the facility, not about one infection or one type of injury. It's about the entire facility. The development process, it was 7 years. So 7-year development process, data or best practices driven. One of our commitments was to make this free and accessible, as is the model food code from FDA. Numerous opportunities were given for input and public comments. We had about 150 people kind of working through the process here through a group of steering committee and technical committees developing the wording for this model code. And again, it was these technical committees had public health, aquatics, academia, all involved working on this. And I think that really was the most efficient way to do this. Two rounds of public comment. We posted modules, then we connected everything. We put it out for public comment. And again, we had about 4,400 comments. We accepted about 70% of them. There were really good comments. I mean, I know everybody hates public comment periods, but when I read these, it was like, how did we miss that? And so it was really a fantastic opportunity, and actually to give people the two opportunities. So we had separate modules, but when we knitted them together, we felt that people needed to be able to crosswalk between things. And so a lot more was found during that time. So I thought it was a really powerful sort of thing. The premise we worked under for doing this was evolution, not revolution. And I know some people will groan when they hear that, but I wanted that, you know, I think as a group, we wanted this to be a code that could be adopted. If you move too quickly, there will be total opposition and it'll be another thing on the shelf. No one will ever adopt this. So you have to do it gradually so that industry and public health really can accept this and gradually move to common goals versus trying to jump all at once where everybody has to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to do something. And it just doesn't work like that. So we were trying to be realistic. So the MAC first edition, Model Aquatic Health Code, was released in August. What did I just say there? No, it wasn't. That was wishful. August 2014, so 2 years ago. And I'll get to the 2016. I know why I made that error. So progress on MAC adoption here. We have almost 30 jurisdictions reviewing this at the current time. And for those of you who have to do this, basically you have to take the MAC, take your code, compare everything in it, make sure that you don't give up something that's more protective, try and move things over, decide what you want. Then you have to put it through your whole process, whether it's legislative, regulatory. You've got to put it out for public comment, then have your board taken, and so on. New Mexico is the first that's going to do full adoption of the Model Aquatic Health Code. They were the first ones who started the moment it came out. We actually had given them a preview of what it was going to look like. That's how long it's taken for them to go through this process. So it is not a fast process to do this. Nova Scotia, Canada adopted an early version. Delaware did some partial adoption already. Iowa has published a notice of intent coming in summer 2016. New York, same thing, notice of proposed rule. rulemaking. You have to announce that you're going to be doing this so that you can move forward. Indiana, Ohio, Virginia, Alabama, and Southern Nevada Health District, all in the process, and Ontario, Canada, in the process of reviewing and adopting parts. NACHO is now sponsoring the MAC Adoption Network, where they're putting people who have done this together so that they can learn from each other. Eugene Knight from New Mexico kind of came on and gave a great presentation about how this was done. It was not easy, and it's harder the first time because you're not just updating your code, you're trying to compare the two. So it takes a little bit longer, but I thought he made a really great point, which is that it's worth the investment now because once I've done this, it's a matter of just updating, and so I'm on track. NACHO also put out a position statement basically saying we really need to support adoption of these sorts of codes and that and move forward. So we've got something out there. I think it's a very valuable tool for state and locals to think about adopting and that. But it's out of date the moment it comes out. What do we do? So data-driven and best practices, it's got to be fed. You got to give it data. You've got to analyze things to know how to change that. CDC technically owns this. We revise it, and we publicly post it. It's the only way our general counsel would allow it to be on our website. So the MAC is on our website. And that means we have the final say in what goes on with it. But I think there's other things. We need more help in getting input. It needs a self-sustaining kind of conduit together, that input. And we want it to mimic what we did in development. What we kept hearing from partners was, we like how you develop this. Don't stop doing it this way. Don't all of a sudden now own it and you just get to do this. We need to be involved. So we created a model council for the Model Aquatic Health Code here. This is a 501c3 that was set up basically to give CDC guidance on how it would keep the MAC updated. We looked at the Conference for Food Protection and the Model Food Code and how that was done. That's an FDA product, Council for Food Protection. There we go. So basically position statements are put in by industry and anybody else through the Conference for Food Protection. There's a vote, and then those recommendations for those voted, positive votes, go back to FDA to choose whether they want to change the code. And so we're kind of modeling after that. Charles Otto from CEH, who I did this with, basically he helped make the model code, the model food code, so we kind of used a lot of that learning. So we established it in 2013, and I think this is really, for us, a good working model on how to move forward. The mission is to funnel advice and data-driven science-based information from public health and the industry back to CDC so we can change it, and it's keeping it up to date. This is the key, and many of you who've got pool codes, I think California, many of them are 20 years old. It's very difficult to update things, and many other states and locals are in the same situation. And so we've actually already started it. We fast-tracked this. We did our first biennial conference. It was released in 2014. We just felt we had to start. So 2015, we did our first biennial conference. We had about 120 people there, about another 100 on live streaming. 159 position statements were put in to basically change requests. Sorry, that's a CSDE term. Change requests were vetted, discussed, and so on. We met and we discussed those, and then there was an electronic vote by all membership. We have about 500 and some members now, to think about how those move forward. And let me just go back to that. And so basically about 60% of those were passed by the membership, and then a letter is sent to our director of CDC saying, we suggest that you change this in the MAC. So it comes back, obviously, down to Jason Koons and I are the contacts for this between our two centers, and we essentially took most of those. There were a few that we thought were problematic and not data-based, and we've told people we want data-based things. This can't be because you think this is a bad thing. And so, because I think we lose trust if we adopt those. So there were a few that we did not, and we've essentially formed some working committees to gather the data, to gather more data, to summarize so that we can think about, does this make sense in the future? So I think, again, at least out of the starting gate, this seems to be a pretty valuable process. It seems to work. We've got some really good suggestions about how to improve things, even on the first edition, as you can imagine. And we fast-tracked that. It's It just came out of CDC clearance. It was a little bit longer than I expected. It was longer to clear this version than the original one, which I don't quite understand, but you know how clearance goes. So we'll be releasing the second edition within the next month. And so that's kind of where we're going. We believe that the Mac should be transformative. You know, somebody made a comment during the meeting saying, you know, you really need to finesse the wording, get it right, and then just leave it alone so we can all adopt it. And, you know, I kind of thought about that for a while, and I had to get up and say, I absolutely disagree with you. This should be a transformative code. If all we're going to do is parse words, then I don't really want to continue doing this. That's not what we came for. We know that aquatics needs to be 20 years, 30 years from now, it needs to change. If we're going to fix crypto, we need better filtration, better inactivation, we need injury prevention, all of these sorts of things, and we can do it gradually, but we have to have a vision for where we're going. And I think the code can do that. And so we have kind of a vision committee that's saying, this is where we want to go. And here's some incremental steps that we need to do. So for filtration, you know, right now it's rapid sand filtration. Well, filtration is a physical process. Rapid is actually the opposite of what you do for good filtration. And so our first step was, okay, we're dropping the filtration rate from 15 to 12 GPMs. That we're not going to do it as fast, and we will drop it again. That was as far as we could go without, you know, people gawking, but rapid sand in a can is not filtration in our mind. It should play a role actually in pathogen removal, and it doesn't, it's removing chunks, not pathogens. So we want to move on from that sort of thing. We need to see what's the impact of this sort of thing. And so Michelle Halavza, Jason Coons, and others, we've worked on setting up a surveillance system to look at the MAC impact over time. And that was, the first round was released. We have, five top counties from the the states with the five greatest numbers of pools. So Florida, Texas, California, New York. Which one? Arizona. Where's Julie? Okay. Hands up there. That have pooled their pool inspection data. We're analyzing all of it so that we can follow that over time. And we're looking at elements that are more risk-based in inspections and moving on from there. But I think the core partnership here is that as we look at environmental health data, what do you think we find about inspection data? It's process data. It's never been used for analysis and decision-making, because if it were, you would have never designed the databases that you can't analyze the data the way you want. And that's what we're dealing with right now. But I think what that brings up to us is this is a transformational sort of thing to think about how we use inspection data. We should be using it as surveillance data. That's what it is. And you can stratify by pool type, by venue. Should I be focused on hotels or the water parks? And we can't answer those questions because we don't ask all the variables. We haven't set up the database to do that. We now have recommendations how to do it. We're talking to the companies that are designing these databases so that you can actually get the data out. And that's where I think, again, what I said at the beginning, we're not expecting all the sanitarians to do the data analysis. What we expect is people are talking, and you bring EPI together with environmental health and your IT people, tie it all together, and actually bring the data that then you can go back to the CMAC and actually put in change requests to say, our data suggests, like you saw back here, all these outbreaks from chemical exposure here, it's about flow sensors and electrical interlocks. We could see that. That's built into the MAC now. It was based on outbreaks. You could see that there was a quick engineering fix for it. So I think that's a very powerful sort of thing to think about. What's the role here is, again, working. I'd like to see, please work with us, somebody. Step up and be that person, that state EPI or other person from state, to submit a 2017 position statement recommending that we really need to think about data and moving us forward so that we can work with the MAC and improve that over time, work with our environmental health specialists to transform inspection data into true surveillance data where we can actually analyze it. This can be done. It's just really laborious right now. Michelle loves it. And Taryn have bruises on their foreheads from banging their head on the table that, oh my gosh, this is really hard to do. But we can redesign our databases. Partner to develop that analysis and data use plan. Submit database MAC change requests. So now we can actually use our surveillance and outbreak data to improve things And join the CMAC. It's like $40 for 2 years. We'd have to pay for some basic operational things, but join it. It's not just for environmental health people. We need EPI people in there bringing the data. And I realize, sorry, that I somehow deleted my acknowledgement slide. So again, Michelle Vlasov from Healthy Swimming, Jason Coons from CEH, our board of directors, Doug Sackett of the CMAC, all sorts of people have been involved in this process. But I think it does show you how data, basic surveillance data, started this entire process, and it's just one step after another, you know, one chunk at a time, and you can actually try and build a system where we're actually going to prevent things. We do think that we can document change over time here. We have outbreak surveillance. We have chemical injury surveillance. We have emergency room visits. We can monitor this, as well as inspection data now, so we can monitor change over time. So join us in this effort, please. Thank you. I guess we're open for questions.
We're open for questions, and I'm going to take a prerogative and take the first question. I've worked with a couple of CDC sections and divisions and whatever, and there is a work group, Walt mentioned, that when I brought up the idea of bringing industry into it, got pushback as far as, well, you can't do that because it'll seem biased and everything else. And I know the name Aquatic sounds really nice, and it doesn't have the industry feel to it.
Right.
But did you have a hard time convincing people at CDC or within your group to bring them into the process?
It's a really great question. I think there was some pushback. I'm trying to think back. It was a long time ago. I'm trying to think back about the conversation and everything. But, you know, when we had the national workshop, and this brought in a lot of CSTE people and other folks, the industry people were pretty impressive. Because we invited the top leaders, and they knew so much more than we do, as far as the technical aspects and the design aspects of what's going on and what's driving some of these sorts of things. So I think it dissipated very quickly. But there is continually questioning about what is the impact of having industry involved in this, because one thing we did differently from the Conference for Food Protection is actually the industry gets to vote. And so they do vote in this. What we agreed on, because I think we had to push this a bit, is I wanted them involved in a vote, but I didn't. The industry is much bigger than public health, and they could swamp out public health. And so it is an electoral college. So it is weighted, meaning it's a 50% public health, 50% industry vote.
That was my next question.
Yeah, so it's weighted. And you know, the industry is kind of pushing back, saying, well, we're, you know, they've parsed themselves into different parts, manufacturers versus designers or whatever, and I just keep pointing out, it's 50-50. I think that's a fair division on things.
So I think my follow-up question sort of speaks to that. When you say industry, do you mean designers and builders of pools and aquatic things, or owners of water parks, or both?
All.
Okay.
Anybody who wants to join can join this organization. So it's kind of split up. There's a manufacturers type thing. They're the people who sell all the stuff, mm-hmm. the owners, operators, and the design and construction type of people. So we've got some of the top design firms in the country are part of this.
So do you see any interest in the design people? Because I immediately thought, well, if I were an engineer, I'd think about how could we not have liquid acid and liquid hypochlorite being dispersed in a way that, thinking outside the box in a whole new way to control pH and chlorine.
They're really quite good when something comes up, is that as long as you're willing to be flexible, what they'll come up with is, there'll be a suggestion, let's just ban this type of design, and clearly that's going to get pushback. What it'll be is, I see what you're saying. What we could do is build it this. We want to have this because that's what clientele are asking for, but we can design it to reduce the injury risk by doing X, Y, and Z on it. And I think that's really powerful to put, because then these change requests can be morphed into something that makes sense and is doable versus if you want to reduce all injuries, outbreaks, and everything, you fill the facilities with dirt. And nobody's really saying to do that. And so there has to be, it's risk reduction, not risk elimination. There will always be risk as long as you have water, kids, slopes, and everything else. But how can you reduce that, I think, is the key. And being, I think what they like about the process is that we're willing to discuss it and not be heavy-handed in things, meaning, well, fine, we'll compromise. We'll do it part way, and then, you know, we'll do a little bit more, we'll do a little bit more.